Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, first half of the show, we got Donald Trump Jr. in studio. An interesting interview with the lad. So you'll hear that in a moment. First, LifeLock. Now there's something called e-skimming. Cyber criminals watch online shopping carts to steal credit and debit card info, names, birth dates, and passwords from websites and mobile apps. They're out there. All they're trying to do is get your information, sell it to somebody or use it, drain your bank account, ruin your credit. It's important to understand how cyber criminals are affecting your lives. They never sleep. They're always out there, and your info's out there. And look, it's good. You can buy stuff online and buy stuff from Amazon and have food delivered and all that kind of stuff, but you need to protect yourself. LifeLock detects a wide range of identity threats, like your social security number for sale on the dark web. And if they detect your information, they will send you an alert. They're the best. They're LifeLock. Right, Dawson?
No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor transactions at all businesses. Join LifeLock now and get an extra 10% off your first year by using promo code Adam. Call 1-800-LifeLock or go to LifeLock.com. Use promo code Adam for an extra 10% off. From Corolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, Donald Trump Jr. With Gina Grad on news, Bald Brian on sound effects, and Dave Damashek's here with good sports. And now, his dad is the second most powerful man on the planet, Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice. We got a man to get on. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for sharing. Good day, Gina Grad.
Good day to you.
Handball, Brian.
Here we go.
I had been busy here because the Secret Service was here earlier, and it was all kerfuffle. But
just a regular Monday
fine.
Around here.
Yeah, somebody, the jokes, the intro's funny because my buddy Kevin Hinch tweeted me, and he's like, hey, you're going to talk to Trump? He said, you guys both had the same life. Like, you have to live under your dad's shadow.
Yeah.
You
escape.
Know?
Yeah.
And I said, I just texted him back. I was like, yeah, my dad doesn't cast a shadow because he doesn't stand up. You have to get off the sofa in order to really create a shadow.
That's true.
Yeah. Sitting shadow. Mm. I guess it's something.
Maybe
if the light's about right.
Maybe it's sundown. Yeah.
Right.
Kind
but
of
it's
a,
not really what you're picturing in terms of living under.
Right. Right.
Hard to live under. You have to burrow under
shadow.
The sofa.
Yep.
If you want to live under my dad's shadow. Speaking of parental complaints, I've been really fascinated lately in people's version of life or what happened or how this thing went down. Mm-hmm. You know, and I've always known some people a little more hysterical. Like Drew would always say, I was walking through the airport, a woman came up and started screaming at me. And I'd go, she wasn't screaming at you. She said something, and what gives you the right to give advice
right.
Or he'd run into these people like, I'm from the Foreskin Restoration Society. I heard you talking about circumcision.
Right.
But they're not screaming. You know what I mean? That's Drew.
Yeah, they're not literally screaming.
Drew's got, confrontational.
Yeah. He's like the chick wire. Mm-hmm. It's everything's kicked up to mm-hmm. the next level. So I get the accounts and reaccounts of things, and I get that, you know, there's a lot of that goes on in the legal system where I saw the man, or but he didn't see the man, or he turned his back and had his hands up and he shot in the back but he wasn't shot in the back. Like, there's a lot of that. But as I go through life, and then I also realize everyone's kind of guilty of doing that. I was explaining, Olga's in the next room, I was explaining to someone the other day, I said, I have low self-esteem. And they went, what do you mean low self-esteem? And I went, I mean, I know what I'm good at, and I own that stuff, but I generally walk around with low self-esteem. Before I leave the hotel room, I tidy it up. I don't leave my trash or my beer bottles or anything out. I do a sweep and I kind of tidy it up, and then I leave.
Do you throw all your towels in the tub? That's my move. All the towels in the tub. Everyone's used. I don't know.
Yeah, I will do some sort of version of I'm going to tidy up and then I will leave. I'm not going to make
good for
they're going to tear the bed down. Yeah. I'm not going to make the bed and I'm not going to wipe down the toilet, but I will tidy up.
Yeah.
And that's just the wiring. But anyway, it's a lower self-esteem. That's fine. Drew has low self-esteem. Like, it's fine. It's a good wiring. High self-esteem is hurting us, as I was thinking about. But anyway, I was having a visit with my mom and my stepdad. I think we hit an all-time low in the talk about nothing department.
That's saying something.
Lower than scones? Mm.
Well, you guys,
lower than muffins?
Lower than Dorothy Gravitch? You guys tell me. I live in a big, expensive house, and I drive cool cars, and I have lots of, you know, I just sold three docs to Netflix that are coming out in the next week or so, and there's a book, and there's much to discuss.
Sure.
That would be interesting. But we talk about yard sales and scones and things like that.
Swap meets.
My stepdad proudly announces a big, big sale, big ticket item he sold at a yard sale.
Mm. Oh.
I say,
who's not being a one-upper?
What was this big ticket item?
Yeah.
He says it was a Schwinn bicycle. I said, what'd you sell it for? $30.
Paul Newman Schwinn bicycle?
$30.
Okay.
That's a big ticket sale for them. I said, when did you buy the bicycle? He said, 1998. Oh, no, 1988.
Oh, 1988. Wow. Vintage.
So it's appreciated.
I said, what did you spend on the bicycle? He said, 25.
What? Mm.
I said,
it's a shrewd investment, man.
Shouldn't you be living your life in Mexico now? Like, shouldn't you just, you could buy full-time security.
Yeah, servants.
Made $5 since 1988.
YOLO, man.
Just throwing dollar bills at the window.
He wasn't bragging like I made $5. This is just something for us to discuss. Yeah. You sold a bicycle.
It's a small talk.
And you made $5.
Small profit talk.
And it was a Schwinn.
Okay.
And some of those Schwinns, they get restored and they go for lots of money. You know, once they get restored, they go for a lot. And again, it's us just sitting there talking about nothing because I have race cars I'm restoring that are worth millions of dollars, but we're just going to talk about a Schwinn that could get restored.
Do you throw that in to add to his point?
No.
That you know about restoration?
We just talk about the Schwinns.
Okay.
And at a certain point, I say, and this is where this is kicks in. At a certain point, I say, well, you know, Schwinn is good stuff because the first unicycle I had was a Schwinn. And back in the day, there was like a Schwinn unicycle. And then there was, like, you know, Woolworth's junky, weird, Taiwanese, crappy. Now, there's a lot of in-between now. What I'm saying is when I was growing up, it was like there was a Huffy, junk, or there was a Twin, a Schwinn. But there wasn't five things in between like there are with mountain bikes now.
Right.
Like, you want one for $500, you want one for $700, you want one for $1,100.
Right.
We'll go up to $10,000. Like, we'll have 13 bikes in there. It was just either you got the junk or you got the good stuff. Mm. It's the it's the Levi tough skin paradigm, which is there is no in between. Now there's a whole bunch of in between. Mm. You know, there's a bunch of fast food that tastes good. It's not even fast food anymore.
Old Navy makes wearable clothes.
Yeah, back in the day it was just McDonald's or you ate out at a restaurant. You couldn't do an in between. So anyway, I said, my first unicycle was a Schwinn. And my mom said, yeah, I remember buying you your first unicycle at a yard sale in Santa Monica. And I thought, well, this is news because
she bought something.
First things first.
News from 1974.
No one ever bought anything for anybody. You got $20 on your birthday and Christmas, but no, people didn't buy stuff for people, number one. Number two, if you really think about the process of buying a unicycle before somebody has a unicycle or knows how to ride a unicycle.
Presumptuous.
It's a kind of a weird thing to see a unicycle and go, hey, my boy could use that. Because at that time, if it's my first, I don't know how to ride a unicycle.
Presumably.
So I was sort of thinking about it, and I was giving her the benefit of the doubt. And I said, "Now, how old was I?" And she said, "You were a teenager." And I said, "Well, I had a unicycle when I was about 10 or 11, and I know where I got the unicycle. I know how I got the unicycle." And it was a very just basic story of my going to my dad's girlfriend's house, who had a son who had a unicycle, and it just was like in his room, and he wasn't around. And we just, they were going to go in the kitchen and cook or something. I was just hanging around, just bored off my ass, somehow see the unicycle, ask if I can like take it outside. And they're like in the kitchen, like, yeah, I gotta go outside. And I remember where I was. It was on the west side. It was a small street sort of around UCLA. And I remember perching myself on a car fender just parked out on the street, just hanging, kind of crawling up the car fender and getting onto this thing. And somewhere between, 3 in the afternoon and before it got dark, by the end of the day, I was able to take like 4 pedals. Mm. And when you take your first 4 pedals on a unicycle, you're bit. Like, it's intoxicating. You're like, oh, my God, I'm going. I'm pedaling. Like, what happens is you can always take your first pedal and a half to get away from the car fender. It's when you keep going. And you just keep going. And, again, it's like 4 or 5 pedals, but it's like, oh, I did it. Yeah. I did it. It was like you stood up on a surfboard for the first time. And then you fell off immediately. But that feeling of I stood up.
You felt it.
And so then I went home. And of course, I was obsessed because I had a balance gene. I had a balance imbalance. And I was like, I need to balance. I need this unicycle. Now, the Schwinn shop where they sold the new unicycles was directly in between my mom's house and my dad's apartment. It was on, I don't know if it's still there, on Laurel Canyon by Chandler. The Schwinn shop, to me, as an atheist, that was my temple. Like, I would go in there and just smell the vulcanized rubber and see the cool apple crate and slick chick.
Ring the bells.
All the bike stuff and the parts. Look at the parts department, the glass display case and all that.
Tassels on the end of your
handlebars. I mean, that was a big deal. Now, possibly normal people would have just stopped at the Schwinn shop and spent $49 and bought a unicycle, but that was completely unimaginable, out of the question, 1,000% wasn't going to happen. But I did know that Grandpa Al Lewis's oldest son, Dave, as I recalled from some years earlier, because I was friends with his younger son, Teddy, had a unicycle. And in fact, it was a Schwinn. I didn't know it at the time, or I couldn't remember, but it was there. And I went, I got to get hold of Dave Lewis, and I'm going to see if he still has that unicycle. And sure enough, like, I called him, and I got a hold of him somehow, and I was like, do you still have that unicycle you used to have from, like, back in the day? And he was like, it's in the yard. Like, it's just in the back. Like, it's rusting out. It's got a flat tire and whatever. And I was like, would you like to sell it to me? And he was like, $15 or something like that. And then I proceeded to, like, wash every car in my dad's apartment building for, like, a buck a car. And I at that point was crazed. I was like a junkie. I was like, I got to get back on this unicycle. I then got my $15, got over to them. They lived in Van Nuys. Got over to Grandpa Al's place. Got the unicycle. Like, the flat tire and the seat was all kind of busted up. You know, the fabric on it,
still
the rubber
money
on it.
To spend.
And I took it. I remember taking an STP pad, the Brillo pad. Yeah, was that what it was? Yeah, what was it called? Not STP. SOS. SOS. The SOS Brillo. And I was cleaning all the rust off it. I was like oiling everything, and I patched a tube, and oiled and fixed, and even took a piece of jean, like, from making cutoffs and made like a seat cover out of denim and like sewed it up.
I would love to see this movie montage.
A doily.
I think Dolly Parton's written a song about it.
Heartstrings. It's coming up on Netflix.
Yes. The unicycle seat of 1,000 quilted things. So I made that thing, and then I rode that thing once I had it. It took me about 2 hours to like really just get on it and go. And then within 3 days, I was riding off of loading docks and park benches and doing, you know, spins and 360s. I was hopping off curbs and I just hop off everything. The thing about the unicycle, at least back when I could do it, you'd be surprised how easy it is to literally ride it off a loading dock.
Loading dock's a badass move, man. That's chest high.
I would go about 3 foot, you know, like picnic. I could ride off a picnic table, no problemo. The way you do it is you grab the front and the back of the seat. You get your feet in the middle, not down or up, right in the middle. And as you go off, you just sort of hop a little. And then when you land, you just land in the middle, butt off the seat.
You're like posting, like when you ride a horse.
You stand up.
Right, exactly.
You stand up, but you hold the seat, you land, then you can ride off. Mm. I used to do it all the time.
Wow.
So anyway. I broke my shoulder playing football and had a big novelty size cast on my shoulder.
That was pop water.
Yes, it was.
Did you have the stand that held it away from your torso?
No, I had a that's the real novelty size. What I had is I had a horribly separated shoulder, and the cast wasn't there to protect my shoulder, to do anything to my shoulder. The cast was there to provide weight to keep my shoulder from coming out because it had been out for 4 days. So I had a big, thick novelty arm cast, and it looked like I broke my forearm or I broke my arm.
It was weighted,
but it was my shoulder that was broken, and it was supposed to hold it down. Now, it also came with this like saxophone string loop that went around your neck.
Now your dad's in.
And then it clipped in. And I was supposed to keep that thing clipped in. Yeah. But after 3 weeks, I was unclipped, and I was just riding around on my unicycle and playing dodgeball and stuff. I had the cast, but I still had good use of my arm. My shoulder felt fine at that point. And I'd been riding around with my cast and at my shoulder. And my parents, who never had rules, announced, at least my mom did, you can't ride around with this big cast on your shoulder because I think it makes her look like a bad mom. And it kind of does. You know, I get it. So I rode the unicycle fine. It made no never mind to me, the shoulder and the cast. And it wouldn't have made any difference. If I fall off, you never fall off a unicycle. You step off it constantly, but you don't fall off it. But anyway, I just rode it, no problem. And then she said, you can't ride it. And then the second I couldn't ride it, my ne'er-do-well buddy up the street, Chris, not Chris you know, wanted to borrow it. Of course, I lent it to him. Of course, he kept it for 3 months. Of course, I got the cast off. And then when I wanted it back, this is the only part of my childhood that I enjoyed. There was no dogs and no basketball hoops or above-ground pools. There was just the unicycle. He said, I put it in your yard. I put it in your backyard. And I said, well, it is not there. I mean, I remember horrified, like going into the backyard, like, where'd he put it? Where is it? Like behind the trees? Is it under the deck? And it's like, no, it is not there. His answer was, well, what are you going to do? And I said,
I'll tell you what I'm going to do.
Well,
small claims court.
I want something, but I had low self-esteem, so there's nothing I was going to do. And I said to my mom, can you speak to Chris's mom and can we figure this out? Because I'm out a unicycle.
And I'm down my unicycle.
I'm down. And by the way, that's all I have. I don't have grades. I don't have, you know, football during the off season. Nothing. I got nothing. I don't have a dog. I don't have anything.
This is my fallback plan.
This is my fallback plan. This unicycle. And then my mom said, yeah. And then I talked to my mom. And I'm unclear whether she ever did it or not, but she just said, yeah, I talked to her, and she said, he said he put it in the yard, he put it in the yard. And that was the end of the unicycle era. Now,
the first mom to ever believe their kids? Because, you know, our moms would have been like, you pay for that unicycle right now. Or you find a unicycle, or you bring one out to this, you know, front yard right now.
There are many, many...
Like, whose mom just believes in face value?
I
especially
don't...
something like that.
Here's what my mom didn't want to do. She didn't want to get into the weeds with this woman, like, liar, or you owe me money, or I'm going to take your kid's bicycle until you return. You know, right. She wouldn't do any. She didn't want to get into a confrontation with her.
Well, and it would also have involved her standing up for her son, which she had no history of.
Right. And then it also would have involved this woman saying her son was a liar or a thief.
That's what I'm getting at.
So my mom said, he put it in the backyard, right? And their mom went, yeah. And
right?
then my mom came home and went, well, that's the end of that.
Fetter the line.
And it's like, hey, bitches, you could have just split the cost of one. Like, we're not talking about a skip loader or a round trip to Maui or anything. It's a fucking unicycle. It's got one wheel.
It's half a bike.
Like, you two, average age, 44 years of age. Like, your average, you're in your mid-40s. There is a Schwinn that is walking distance. Mm-hmm. Could have just went, I'll pay half, you pay half, let's get the kid whatever.
You should want to pay half to make the whole thing go away. To end the conversation.
But no unicycle, last unicycle, and that was it in the unicycle department. So I found it interesting the other day when my mom was recounting the story of buying me my first unicycle, when in fact, it's quite a bit worse than not buying me my first unicycle. You helped give away my first unicycle never took any responsibility. Like, well, I was the one who said you had to get off it, and I told you I have to get off it. Then Chris borrowed it. Then Chris stole it. And now, and I never had another unicycle. Right. There was no more of that. Now, I do get that in your brain, this is how you would have liked things to have happened. Like, it happened all the time. When I chase that purse snatcher down the street in Santa Monica with the woman was screaming and blah, 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 and got the purse back and everything else. Eventually, when everyone gathered out on the street and the cops showed up, and the cops were like, what happened? There was a lot of, we heard screaming, so no, you're in your apartment. I was on the street chasing the guy, and then he dropped the purse, and he jumped into a RX-7, and he took off. That's what happened. But I know you wish it went down this way.
Maybe if I say it enough times.
Right. So I find it very interesting. And I know, like, I get it. Like, people get older, memories fade and stuff like that. Memories do fade. But what about concocting new stories that are super flattering to you?
Yeah, memories evolve.
Like, it's basically, it's like, you're at the end of the line. You're a horrible mom. Well, but I don't want to go to the grave being a horrible mom. So I'm going to start putting some stories together. Yeah.
Memories do fade. But how clearly, I can remember my grandpa especially, how clearly do the memories stay of, like, really great moments? Of, like,
they
you
stay
know,
in your favor.
Yeah, exactly. Moments that are, you know, favorable to you. Right. Or, like, oh, this one time. Like, your memories is pretty clear when it comes to that.
Well, that's like the broken cash register theory. Why is it only ever broken in your favor?
Right. That is the way I look at it. So I thought it was very interesting that we were telling this story. My poor stepdad, he was like caught in the middle of the, I don't remember you getting over a unicycle. I do kind of remember his story.
Of course he does.
But I can't pipe up because I gotta live with this person.
I gotta sleep in not the same room.
Yeah. I gave my stepdad a buck slip, which is the another thing I'm endlessly fascinated with. My stepdad pulls out pieces of those, I don't know what size the very small notepad paper, not pad, but the little binder papers are. The ones that are like 4 inches, 5 inches tall, and 2.5, 3
you
around.
Flip them over. And
sideways. Or yeah, you flip them over. They're just
like little memo pads of the,
they're like wallet size, but a little.
Yeah,
a
like
little
size
bigger.
Of a wallet.
Right.
And he has
3x5.
And he has like a loose paper. And for years, he's been pulling it out, and he's like making, so, oh yeah, I gotta get new batteries for my hearing aid and stuff like that. And I see him fumbling with it because it's paper. It's like he's trying to write on origami, you know, and it's too much pen for his first paper. And so I said to him like 5 years ago, I go, John, you should get a buck slip. You just get a pile of buck slips. And then you just go online or get them wherever and just have the bike. You're writing stuff constantly on this thing. Your pen is poking a hole in the paper, and it's all crinkled up. And you're like trying to read your writing.
It's
all over your hand.
I was like, get a buck slip. Get buck slips. And he goes, oh, okay. And then I'd see him like, you know, 6 months later, a little piece of paper is coming out again. He's got writing something down. And I'd be like, get a buck slip. Oh, yeah, yeah. And then I sent him seven times. And then at a certain point, I saw him over the weekend. He's, of course, he's writing on the weird piece of paper again. I go, John, just, I don't get it. Why don't you just go online and order a stack of 50 Buck Slips? And he goes, oh, the guy said they're out of them.
The guy.
And I was like,
the guy.
I always do what I do, which, by the way, if you ever hear me do this,
Mr. Amazon,
run in front of a truck. Like, if I go, well, if the guy said there's nothing you could do, then I guess that's that. There's just no possible way to get Buck Slips. And then
I called Bezos. He said, no can do.
I went in the other room and I got him some of my Buck Slips. And I was like, oh, look at this. You can ride on it with that. But I thought, what is that thing in life where you just go, yeah, I know you keep telling me to do this thing, but I'm never going to do it. And then my answer will be, the guy said no.
No.
About what? About Buck Slips?
Like, yeah, I wonder if it's the devil you know, number one. Like, he knows the paper. That's his system. And number two, you made the motion in the pocket. The Buck Slip's too big for the pocket. So I wonder if it's just like, it's just a simple explanation is, hey, this fits in my pocket.
Can't cut him in
breast
half.
Pocket.
Well, if that's his simple explanation, he would offer it up. He doesn't offer that up. He goes, true. I can't find him. I don't. And also, you fold him in half. Yeah. You can slide him right into anywhere you want. But I just... It's so weird. Like, people, like, I don't know. Like, when somebody gives me a tip or goes, hey, why don't you do this instead of that? I go, oh, thank you. And then I start the next day. Yes.
I gave Christy the coffee and the cream. The shake it up and got all the cream out. I gave her that tip the other day. She loves it.
Is Olga still out there? Get her on the hot mic. Did she leave?
She's not here anymore.
Oh. Bought Sunny Vans. I'm going to fire her. All right. Well, if where'd she go?
Oh, so they went to the store. They're coming back.
Oh, okay.
More Vans.
Oh, well, when they come back,
bring cream.
When they come back, we'll put her on the mic.
All right.
Hey, Doug, 36, Boston.
Ace man, get it on.
Get it on, man.
So, just left the corporate world. We're kind of working in the trades now, and been walking into some really terrible houses over the last month or so. Some sites I never thought I'd see. What's some of the kind of maybe the worst houses you've been into doing construction and that kind of thing?
I mean, in terms of like shoddy whatever?
Not shoddy. I'm talking about the people and I'm talking about the stuff they got in there.
Earthquake rehab.
In the last month, I've been blown away.
Well, doing earthquake rehab, obviously the guy who defecated into a 5-gallon bucket and just kind of kept it. These were all studio apartments with Murphy beds.
Yeah.
Murphy, did they have those anymore?
No. I mean, I don't know, but they had them when this place was built in the 30s. There's the defecating the bucket guy. There was the guy who had an entire wall of panels cut out from the 1/2-gallon milk container, the cardboard ones that had the missing kids on them.
Wait, you were defecating the bucket guy.
I was. I was a pioneer.
Lest ye judge. Lest ye be judged.
Hold on. Do you know the difference between defecating into a 5-gallon bucket and a decorative popcorn tin, complete with a snap lid, these are worlds apart.
You know, not having done either one, I wouldn't know.
I am nobility compared to this animal. Well, to be fair to me, I lived in a garage with no bathroom, and I would get locked out of my house. So I could take a leak out in the shrub, but I couldn't do a number two because I was locked out of the house. These guys had a bathroom. He just chose to make into his bucket. The guy with the panels, man, that guy with the panels, he was the freakiest. He had just thousands. Well, it's like it's one of those things where it's like he would buy a gallon or a 1/2-gallon of milk, probably twice a week, and over the course of 13 years, he would rinse it out. He would cut just the panel out with the missing kid and stack them to the ceiling. I think several of those kids were behind the panels he'd cut out.
Well, that's the thing. We know he's a serial killer, yes?
Run away.
Yeah, that's what this whole thing was about.
The video was just all missing kids.
Just missing kids.
Sorry. Yes.
Great song, by the way.
Yeah, I like this song. So there was another guy who did bring prostitutes into his room. These were all subsidized living people. There's, of course, Shaky Jake with the shotgun. A lot of cooking with lard, man. Cooking with lard and bad shag are not a good combo in very small units.
Yeah, really stays in there.
But as I was thinking, you know, I think we were talking about this. Sonny's never really going to have this life. the places that smelled like something. The Five and Dime store had a smell. Yeah. You go inside.
The Schwinn shop.
The Schwinn shop had a definite smell. These people's apartments, all not everything's all kind of Febrezed up, and there's no smoking anywhere, and blah, blah, blah. But like places that had distinct smells. Millicent was the one who managed the whole thing. She had a fat cat. She was out front.
It's an Angelina Jolie movie.
Yeah, sort of. I have, but going into those people's units is definitely by far the worst. And then there was cockroaches and stuff everywhere. And when you tear apart the walls,
scatter.
The kitchen walls, they're all behind up in there in the kitchen, and it'd be really hot in there, and there's no air conditioning or anything. And it was a disaster. Doug?
Yes, it is. I'm looking forward to a great future now. Thanks for the.
Yeah, it's going to
be really nice.
It's going to be awesome. What kind of construction are you getting into?
Well, we're getting into fire alarm installation, all that kind of stuff. So we got to get in the creepy crawly places and get all that kind of stuff in there. So
I have a complaint. Thank you. I don't know. Max Batty, you know this about me. I put together a plan, and then that's my plan, and then that's what we do, and then that's how it works, except for other people don't seem to go along with that a lot.
Yeah, there are a lot of variables.
People here are pretty coached up. Like, what I do is I don't, you know, if we have a 7:05 flight, I don't go meet at the shop around 6. Mm-hmm. I just go wheels up 6:10. Yeah. Wheels up 6:10. Whatever that means.
Yeah, yep. It's up to you.
You may show up 2 minutes before we leave or 20 minutes before we leave. I just give the I say at 6:10, everyone's in the car and we're backing out of this driveway or going forward with Mike Ogg's backpack flying into the 5 freeway.
Whatever,
but either
it
way,
may be.
Whatever it is. And so I tend to speak in these little short, little concise pieces. And then I try to convey that to people where they'll go, you know, I will be there at. So I did a CNN hit on Saturday. CNN is doing something interesting, which I think is going to be the wave of the future, which is they have one of those Sprinter vans, sort of Mercedes makes one. I think Ford makes one. Maybe Chrysler makes one. They're the tall boy, the tall boy ones. They're kind of cool because, like, they're good if you're a plumber. They're good if you're an electrician, but they're also good if you're doing production.
Mobile dog grooming.
Yeah. And it's like you can get a base model for like $35,000 and they work and they're pretty comfortable.
They're pretty customizable too.
Yes. Right? And they're it's kind of a very European style. Mm-hmm. We have the big vans. This is like a smaller van, but it's tall.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, you could put leather seats in it, make it a luxury, whatever, or you could put racks in it and make it a work van. CNN. Oh, Max Pat, you got to get my phone because I took this picture. It was funny. So CNN says, hey, Saturday, we're going to do a hit with you. And I say, okay. And normally you have to drive to the satellite place and get all set up and whatever. And now they bring the Mountain of Mohammed. They bring this Sprinter van. The back of it, it's diabolical. It's the back of the van. And it has a wall between the cab and the back. There's a camera that's on a rail. And you can tell it looks like you could slide it up 3 inches or move it down for Dr. Ruth or move it up for Kareem Abdul-Jabbar or whatever. But it's a mounted railed camera. They have
God forbid the co-star in a movie together. It's going to be a nightmare.
they have a black chair, stool kind of thing, but it's mounted. It's like hard mounted. It's like screwed to the ground. Right. They have behind you a screen. It's not that wide. It's like 4.5-5 foot wide by like 3 foot with just LA at night, you know, permanently on there, or they could probably change the backdrop, right? You open the van, the rest of the van is all just sort of black and cloth and acoustic. They have like a little basket with like some hairspray and a mirror, handheld mirror and that kind of stuff. You go in there, you go through the big slider door, you sit down, the guy clips the mic onto you, he puts the earpiece in, and then you sit there. And you just do a whole remote hit from your driveway.
I was not aware of that.
So I wasn't either, but it's better than getting up and driving to Encino at 5:30
easier
in the morning.
Easier for them, too.
So right.
They own the equipment. They're not using a satellite location.
And also, they know where you are. Once they find out where you are, because you may not show up at the Van Nuys satellite location on Saturday at 6:05. You know, they here they know you're there.
They'll be there.
So I go, okay, what's the story? And the reason I took a picture of it and it made me laugh is they're going to show up at 5:30 on Saturday. My house gets royally TP'd on Friday night at 10 o'clock at night. And I'm like, oh, God damn it. And I'm like, Natalia's laughing, like everyone's laughing. I go, you know, the CNN van is going to be pulled. He's not parking my driveway steep. He's going to park in the street right in front of my house, right where the house just got TP'd. And that's where he's parking. And they're laughing even harder. And I'm like, I'm not like embarrassed, but it's weird to walk through dangling toilet paper. And
it's
he's
not
pulling
a great
up.
First impression.
Yeah, it's your wedding day or it's the worst day of your life.
Right. So you have a picture, Max Banner? Now, the picture I'm showing you is as he's pulling away. He was parked directly under all the toilet paper that was hanging from the tree.
They did a nice job with the
TV. It up at adamcarolla.com. Yeah, it's just there's many shots. There's many more pieces of toilet paper hanging from my trees. But anyway, so I thought it was comical that I got TP'd Friday night and Saturday at 6 a.m. CNN was showing up their van to park under my TP tree and do my thing. But anyway.
Was there any talk of it or you just pretend like it didn't happen?
I like walked out. You know, I did the kids these days or whatever. I don't know. And
it's kind of an honor, actually.
So here's the thing. In terms of the plan. I kept saying to Matt, because I know how it goes. They go, what time do they want? They want you down there at 6. Then they're going to do like a hit, you know, a mic check or quick hit at 6:20. And blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay. Now, all I've been doing is getting up early and leaving. Early. It's my whole life. This whole week's been early get up. So I was like, okay, Matt, you tell them I will be at that van at 6:10. And then I will walk in and then we can do our thing at 6:20. And we'll do the hit at 6:35 or whatever it is. But I will be there at 6:10. He goes, okay. I'll tell him that. So at 6:09, I go walking out of my door next to my garage, sort of downstairs door. And as I'm walking down the driveway toward the CNN van, I hear, I'm like, huh? Oh, he's pounding on the front door. Now, everyone's up, but they're doing calisthenics. Oh, no, wait a minute. Everyone's asleep. So
they're the Pelotons looking out the giant window.
Yeah. So this guy's like on the front door. I'm down the thing, and now I'm having to go without trying to wake people up. It's 6:05. I'm not going, hey, you're here. And the guy's like, I'm turning around. Right. And he turns around. He's like, oh, okay. And I'm like, he's walking down. And now my first interaction with the poor guy has to be, I said I was coming to the van at 6:10. It is 6:10. I am at the van. You do not have to pound on my front door. I have kids. Everyone's asleep. This is why I'm meeting you at the van. And he's like, I know. They made me. Because what production always does is, where is he? Well, it's not 6:10 yet. That's where he is. But they get all nervous and they're like, go get him.
Yeah, the problem is you're an outlier in a very flaky group of individuals. And there is a long history of people being 10 minutes, an hour, whatever late. And you got to pound on that door. Not your door, but their door.
Patrick, 28 from Denver, says his mom was the 17-year-old in the Winger.
Oh, come
song.
On.
Wait, she's only. Is that in that one?
No, that's Benny Mardones.
Well, no.
She's only 17.
Oh, sorry.
Benny was 16, I think, or something. Patrick?
Yeah, hello. First time, long time. Pleasure to chat with y'all.
Your mom was the 17-year-old depicted in the Winger video?
Oh, not in the video. It's always family lore that back in the day, when she was a delinquent around the streets of Denver, she hung out with Kip Winger and those guys. And shortly then after, they went off to New York and wrote that song and all that fun of stuff. And we've always kind of given her shit that that's she's that 17-year-old that they're singing about not wanting to touch.
Oh, no, not this one.
Oh, still works.
She's gone.
I think I saw her in that milk carton. Well, let's do the math. That song was a hit in what year?
Album came out in 88.
Album came out in 88. This would have been presumably a year before that or some period of time before that.
Mid-80s or so.
How old is your mom now?
She, so I'm adopted, so it's a whole long thing. But she was 21 when she had me. I'm 28 now, so she's just about to turn 50, I guess.
So she's about to turn 50. So somebody do the math on the 88. 88 is 30 years ago now? What, 98? Yeah.
31 years ago.
31 years ago, and she's about to turn 50, so that would have made her 18, I guess, or so.
Okay. And that's when that song came out, so, you know, they were hanging out before. They went to New York and kind of hit it big, but...
Oh, is your mom... Yeah. Okay, let me ask you this. You're adopted, so are you in contact with your mom?
Yeah, I met them, the biological family, when I was about... I think it was about 19. I finally actually met them. My biological sister contacted me when I was 17, though, and I just went to college.
Is your biological sister attractive, and is your mom attractive?
That's always subjective, but
no, it's not. You can tell.
She's a bigger girl, so...
She's a bigger gal.
You know, voluptuous. Take that with what you want.
Uh-huh. So this must affect your daily life in immeasurable ways, right?
Oh, I'll be in Walmart or some random place, and you'll hear that Winger song come on, and I'll definitely get a good chuckle. I'll send my mom a video and get a good laugh about it.
This song's in Walmart?
Yeah, no, you'll hear it at random places, not Walmart, you know, like Walmart, or you'll be at Target, or if you kind of listen to those background songs like Adam does, they're pretty unsavory sometimes.
Well, there's always the Muzak version playing at the nicer restaurants.
A little flute.
Yeah. You know, the thing that's weird is in the annals of like sort of mom in the actual video as a 17-year-old, great. Mom is the abused minor, bad.
Yeah.
You know, this could have gone a better way.
Oh, no, yeah, I know it could have, but, yeah, no, that's her having a song written about her being an underage sex object is definitely one of the least traumatizing things of her childhood, so it's, you know, it's, I'll take that as a win.
Do you, are you okay with the step-parents and adoption and everything now?
Oh, yeah, no, it's one of those things where I kind of grew up knowing I was adopted, so I kind of, it's always been kind of the norm, and always had parents that loved me, and then got to meet some other people who, you know, we're definitely, it's been good to share my life with them, that's for sure.
All right, good. What business are you in now?
Long story short, currently unemployed. I was working and living down in the Caribbean, and then the hurricane kind of rolled through 2 years ago and smashed shit up, and now I've been kind of back here in the States kind of getting it all resorted out.
I'm going to tell my son, I got a couple of thoughts for him. You know, my thing is, like, I don't want to pay for college, but I do want the credibility that goes with college. Yeah. So I'm just going to tell him Drew's College, the Lord Jeff's.
Amherst.
I'm just going to tell him to go to Amherst. Say I went to Amherst. Like, memorize Lord Jeff's. Right. Memorize the name of, like, one of the buildings and two of the housing projects.
The hall.
And then you're covered. Nobody's got any more Amherst questions for you. And look, if you're busted, you're busted. Like, if you run into someone at a cocktail party who worked at Amherst or something,
endowment facility.
Then there's going to be an issue and you're going to be outed.
But for that rare instance, there's going to be, you know, 100 more where people are going to go, Amherst.
And in the out of job department, like, I was working in the Caribbean and then the typhoon blew through. No one's going to go, well, you're just lazy, that's all.
Which typhoon?
Yeah. Like, you just go, I was in the Caribbean, a typhoon blew through, and I'll go, okay.
When was that?
You just bought 6 months of unemployment in my mind. You start going, my boss at the car wash, all this shit didn't stink. Now we got a different relationship. And I'm sure that's what did happen. But I will judge you much differently if you do the Caribbean thing with the storm blowing through.
Yeah,
smart.
All right, let me hit this. It's $53,000 a year to go to Amherst.
Yeah, that's private, just the tuition.
Those private schools are outrageous.
Look, I don't want to sound like Mr. Grandpa here, but all the talk about like student loans and how they're going to pay this back. We got to make the loans free. We're going to pay it back. Look, I don't know. Could we bring the price down a little for college?
Or it's an acceptable investment. It's like you're going for that, you know, whatever that position is, whatever that job, career, whatever. Right. It's like you know what the costs are. The cost of entry is this. And
I agree, but I mean, with the politicians nonstop, like bagging on the banks college that gave the loans or whatever, just bring it all down a little bit. Like they have huge endowments. Yeah. It can't
massive
physically cost that much to have the kids in school. Like, why don't we turn it into a little less of a business? And I'll just basically say the same thing to the politicians. Like, your whole thing is like with the pharmaceutical companies. Right. Like, these people are trying to make a huge profit off people. This is life and death. Mm-hmm. This is people's future. And they're making all this profit. It's like, yeah, it is. And that's what they're doing. But so is college. Mm-hmm. The people's future and the people's whatever. They're trying to make a big profit out of it. So why don't we just take the same thing and apply it there?
Yeah, they're not being taken advantage of like a bait and switch. Like, you didn't know it was going to cost this much and now you do. It's like, no, we all know what the price tag is. Chris just looked it up.
Just bring it down. That's all. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's doable. How can it? I mean, several hundred. I mean, you get out of there. I mean, that's not with room and board and books and everything.
Nope.
I mean,
books are expensive.
So you're into $350,000 by the time that kid gets out 4 years.
Yep.
Jesus Christ. If my kid did that and was
that's wasting my time
and went the Corolla family route, was like, I'm a Chicano studies major with a minor in ceramics, I'd be like, no fucking way, get out of that school.
Not on my dime.
I'm not doing $350,000 so you can work at Alvera Street. You better work on some hard science or something, like something with computers, like something where you can get paid when you're done. All right. Wow. $71,300 a year with room and board.
That's wild.
All right. Manscaped, supporter of the Adam Carolla Show. And these guys do support us, and that comes from Manscaped. Best in men's below-the-belt grooming, precision-engineered tools for the family jewels. 'Tis the season of Manscaped, everyone. It's a great gift. Perfect package 2.0. Comes with the lawnmower 2.0 electric trimmer. Waterproof for the shower. Skin-safe technologies. Not going to nick or snag the family jewels down there. Also includes a crop preserver, anti-chafing, ball deodorant, and moisturizer as well. And a pair of Manscaped high-performance anti-chafing boxer briefs as well. Keeps the junk fresh and keeps it where it belongs all day, every day. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code ACS at manscaped.com. Your balls are going to thank you, right, Dawson?
Get 20% off and free shipping with the code ACS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Use code ACS. Clean up your nuts and make Santa proud this year.
All right, we'll take a quick break. Come back. Donald Trump Jr. right after this.
The holidays are around the corner. It's time to drink too much, eat too much, and fight about Trump at the dinner table. Luckily, we've got just what you need to make the most of this most wonderful time of the year. Introducing the Corolla Christmas Stocking. The custom embroidered stocking is adorned with the hand-knit word, acehole, sewed on by talented elves and or children from the Orient. What's inside? Glad you asked. With your purchase of the Corolla Christmas Stocking, you'll get an ACS Nativity Scene t-shirt featuring Max Apata as baby Jesus and Adam as Mother Mary, a custom Happy Birthday Jesus ornament, 4 Corolla Drinks wine glasses, plus 2 bottles of your choice, all for only $99. And for those who want to go big for the holiday season, you can also purchase the Stocking Scrapbook Combo for only $175. Get the stocking and the 10 years of ACS scrapbook, signed by the entire network for the ultimate Corolla fan in your life. So get to CorollaDrinks.com today and get ready. The holidays are coming.
Donald Trump Jr. is my guest. Good to see you again, my friend.
Likewise. Good to be back.
Triggered is the name of the book, How the Left Thrives on Hate and Wants to Silence Us. It's available now on Amazon. It's doing very well. I've listened to the audiobook. I've listened to about 7 hours of it. 7 of the 10 plus, I think it's, or
probably
9
about
plus.
That, yeah.
It's a very comprehensive book. I know you're a lightning rod, and there's always controversy where we go.
I seem to be dominating like, every day with the never-ending, you know, outrage cycle. I seem to be a part of each and every one of them. It's amazing.
Well, I wanted to. So my thing was like I wanted to take a sort of psychological dive into that and how that works, because I've been thinking. I approach everything from sort of a psychological perspective, mm-hmm. and then it turns into a comedic perspective. But at first, it's psychology. And I want to get into this hatred,
yeah.
and, which is different than a disagreement. Everyone
Correct.
Disagrees with everyone all the time. But 100%. Then how does it spill into a loathing? Do you have, other than the disagreement part, do you have any thoughts about that from a psychodynamic standpoint?
Yeah, I haven't, other than, you know, it just seems to be sort of a herd mentality, right? You know, you see it every day. I mean, the example I used that I sort of most defined, you know, just the crazy that we are living today was, you know, last week when they killed al-Baghdadi, right? I mean, this is the founder and leader of ISIS, Adam. This is a guy that has doused journalists in gasoline and lit them on fire. Someone who's thrown homosexuals off building, raped, you know, women, killed people all over the place. And, you know, my father, I was at a speech with Pompeo. I didn't even know this at the time, but I was at a speech with Pompeo last week, and he said, you know, when I was CIA director, the first thing Donald Trump said, I want to take off the head of the snake. That's the guy I want to go after. And so Donald Trump gets it, and in the Washington Post, you know, where democracy apparently dies in darkness, the title of his obituary is Austere Religious Scholar.
Right.
You know, and I'm just like, I don't know, you know, what to talk about when you talk about the psychology, but if that hasn't, you know, made someone lose their mind that
right.
We can't even agree that the founder and leader of ISIS, the murdering piece of shit that he is, isn't like we're better off that they have to try to make
right.
him out to be, you know, well, he's a little bit misunderstood. You know, that's the craziness that we're living in this day.
Right. And I was looking at it and I was exploring it the other day. And I sit here next to Dr. Drew and I sit mm-hmm. here next to guys like Mark Garagos. And I realize they disagree with some or half of your dad's policies, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a quarter
yeah.
of what your dad's policies are. But they're not triggered.
Correct.
They're not angered.
Correct.
They don't have a visceral, he's a monster, yeah. he's got to be stopped. It's something that's triggered in other people, like a guy like Bill Maher. I said he's
yeah.
a very thin-skinned
yeah.
guy. Mark Garagos probably politically aligns with Bill Maher, but he's not thin-skinned.
Correct. You've seen that. The outrage cycle, I used to think it was for effect, but it's not anymore. I mean, like, Trump derangement syndrome is real. I always joke, the only cure is 4 more years, because we really have to reset, you know, this conversation. Because if that can be the response, you see these guys, they can't even acknowledge that, like, hey, maybe I may not agree with the policies. I may not always like the messenger, but the results sort of speak for themselves. I mean, are they really upset with all-time low unemployment for African Americans? I mean, Bill Maher, I saw the clip, what was it, 2-3 weeks ago. You know what? It'd be worth it for America if the economy imploded, if people lost their jobs, lost their homes because they couldn't afford to pay their mortgages, just to get rid of Trump. I'm like, so you would really, you're okay. Just, you know, let's make unemployment numbers rise as opposed to lower. Let's make people lose their jobs, lose
right.
their homes, lose their families just because you don't like Trump. Like, it
well,
seems outrageous. And that
yeah.
more outrageous is that people are like, yeah, I'm kind of with them on that one. Rather than like, come on, man. Like, we're Americans. Like, can't we do what's right for the country? And
well, you know, it goes, I don't know if you run into this a lot, but it's like, I toggle between Hollywood and Ben Shapiro
yeah.
and Dennis Prager.
But no one else is willing to even play that game. So I commend you for actually being willing to do that. And so few in your position are willing to even take a right-wing stance because they know they're going to get canceled.
Well, the thing that's interesting is, first thing, I've not changed any of my thoughts in
right.
the last 25 years. I've always talked about family. I've always talked about education. I like competition. I want school choice.
Well, you're
I
a racist.
Vouchers. I know.
Obviously, you're alt-right.
That's all I've ever said. I'm a guy. I'm a dumb guy from the San Fernando Valley who never went to college. I worked construction my whole life. I never had anything, and I've always had these thoughts. Now, I saw what successful people did. Mm-hmm. I went to North Hollywood High. We had my loser buddies. We had the black kids that were bussed in from the inner city. We had the Hispanics from the deeper valley. And then there was a handful of Jewish kids who lived up in the hills.
Mm-hmm.
Their families were intact. They made their kids do the homework. They ended up going off to UCLA and Stanford, and we went to a construction site and dug ditches.
Yeah.
I figured out early that was going to be the key. Families intact.
Yeah.
focus on education, and you may do whatever you want in this country.
And honestly, there's almost even attack on like family structure these days.
Yes.
I mean, it's you say this, and I'm like, I'm having this conversation with you, and it's like, if I was in any other place in time, I'd be like, are we really having this conversation? Could that really – and it actually is because you promote family structure. Well, you're being discriminant against those who may not have the benefit of that, and like – that is such an asinine sort
of
well, you know, viewpoint, and to be attacked for it, well, is crazy.
First off, that is being racist. Assuming groups can't have families and educations or shouldn't do the right thing
or
aren't capable of it.
Math is racist today.
It's insane.
There's the problem with the whole racist thing from the left. I sort of say it in the book, which is, racism has become the easy button of the left. If I can't win an argument with fact, if I'm not doing so well, if the fact set doesn't work out to my benefit, racist.
Right.
And so the problem is this. It's a real issue in this country. It's just not the only issue. It's not the cause of all of our problems. It's a much smaller thing. I don't want to say it's very small, because then someone will cancel me for not acknowledging it, even though I'm literally saying it's a real problem in this country. But it's not the answer to everything. And the problem we do is, by calling racism on every issue that we're not in agreement with, you do a disservice to those who are actually afflicted. Because now when I hear it, I sit there, I roll my eyes, I move on. And the people who are actually hurt, which again, it's a much smaller amount than you'd like to believe, or they would have you believe, those people are left in the wake of that, and it's sad.
I have this statement, which is, there's never been a better time to be an actual racist, because you're going to get lumped in.
Hey, I get full coverage. This is great.
You get lumped in with Dennis Prager and Ben Shapiro, and you and me.
Well, I mean, Ben Shapiro's incredible. It's host Prager. I mean, alt-right neo-Nazi Jews.
Right.
It's interesting. It's an interesting take. I mean, there's some psychology that has to go into that, but I don't quite understand. They do the same thing to my father. I mean, he's obviously, a Nazi with a, Jewish daughter that works in his administration. And son-in-law is like, man, Thanksgiving's going to really suck. That conversation is going to be brutal later on.
Well, once folks get on a sort of verbal ad hominem roll, that's hard to slow the roll. And what I say to people, there's a simple thing I've been saying to people a lot. And I don't know if this comes up in your world, I'm sure, where people go like, listen, I don't agree with a thing Ben Shapiro has to say. I don't agree with a thing Jordan Peterson has to say. I don't agree with a thing Dennis Prager has to say. But I do agree that they should have the right to say it.
Correct.
And most people go, oh, okay. But I always stop people and go, oh, no, you agree with about 80% of what Ben Shapiro has to say. Ben Shapiro talks about facts.
It.
They talk about family. They talk about communities.
Yeah.
They talk about working hard. He talks about spirituality. I mean, he talks about so many things that you would have to agree. And by the way, I know you agree because you live that kind of life as well.
Correct.
So this thing of going like, I don't agree with the thing Dennis Prager says, why even jump off there? Why not say we disagree about some things?
Yeah, well, I talk about it extensively in the book, which is sort of that notion of people have sort of been badgered into like, well, I can't admit that publicly. I mean, we did it. The interesting take that I talk about was, when we did our polling, like large sample sizes back in 16, we do online and we do telephone polling. And, statistics would dictate you're within basis points of each other, right? Not even percentage points. And when we did our online polling, we did 15% better than we did by telephone. So people were by themselves at their computer. They could do a little look around, be like, okay, no one's watching Trump. Okay. When they were on the phone, they weren't sure where the person was coming from. They didn't want to be called a racist, for, wanting to implement policies that they felt would better their lives or their families or their children's or their American dream, But, on the phone, you get answers like, Jill Stein overperformed incredibly. It was like, well, yeah, I'm writing in Jill Stein. They were like, so we were like, what do we do? How do we reconcile that craziness? And so we started asking those same people to kind of get to your, looking at it from a psychological standpoint. We said, okay, you're writing in Jill Stein. Who's your neighbor voting for? Oh, that guy's voting for Trump.
Right.
I mean, they wanted to say it. They just didn't want to take all the heat associated with it.
And that's
where we are today.
It's a very human characteristic that most everyone possesses.
Mm-hmm.
A couple things. First off, in the book, you talked about being on construction sites as a young person. I have said this to anyone who listened in the last 5 years. I go, look, you have to build something. You have to have the experience of building something to be pragmatic.
Correct.
You can't just live in this world of ideas or I know in my heart or I feel this way, thus it is. When you build, you get a kind of a grounding. And it's just in your veins.
100%.
And you can't make me feel something or believe in something or say something because I have so much building background. My thing is just calcs and lateral load and hold downs and all thread and shear loads and grade beams and and how thick number 4 rebar is and number 5 rebar. And that's all my world is. So you can give me an idea, but if it doesn't make sense, it's not going to work. And I feel like when I listen to the book, the audiobook, Triggered, I got this feeling that you and your dad and sort of the whole Trump building side of the family got a grounding in building and the crazy pragmatism that takes.
100%. I mean, I think there's sort of two parts of that, right? First of all, my father was a better builder than other developers because he didn't just isolate himself in like a glass tower somewhere, listen to guys that are looking at a spreadsheet and telling you how to build. I mean, he actually got down on the ground with the construction workers every day. Like, he'd ask them questions. He'd be at a job site at 6 a.m. and, hey, how do you think we could do this better? What do you think about this? They'd say, hey, this contractor's kind of screwing you a little bit over here. If you did this, you could bypass this amount of duct work, have more efficiency, save some money. So he got a real life experience that allowed him to be better. It also translated later on into politics, where like, well, how does this brash billionaire from New York, how is he able to talk to regular people? Well, he spent 40 years talking to regular people. For us, for me, for my brother, we grew. I always joke, I'm the only son of a billionaire that can drive a D10 because I've actually done it. I've run chainsaws. I change out my own bar oil on the weekends when I'm doing we did that, and he wanted to make sure, hey, if you're going to be a builder too, you better damn well know how to do it, and not just in theory. Like, you're starting at the lowest rung. You're going to dig a ditch, because if someone else is going to dig a ditch and they're going to charge you for it, you better know how long it takes to dig a damn ditch. And so, he made us do those jobs. I mean, my first job was away from home at like 15 as a dock attendant, in Atlantic City. Like, I lived away from home at summer as a 15-year-old to like hook up electrical systems, water systems. I then went into, landscaping and running machinery, running chainsaws. Like, he made sure we worked. And some of the executives, even in his company, were guys that didn't have, JD MBAs. There were guys that worked their ass off on a construction site. He's like, there's a street smart. There's something like you have, right, that you got through that without the acronyms behind your name. And he'd give them a chance and give them a little bit more and a little bit more. And they continued to excel and exceed. And that's why you had so much of the loyalty within our company, because those are guys that know they'd never be where they are today in a company if it was a typical executive that just sort of said, well, I'm hiring based on XYZ credential and that's all we can possibly do. He gave those guys a chance of a lifetime, and they'll run through a wall for him.
We have, by the way, so I was listening in the book, and Donald Trump Jr. said, I can tell the sound. I could tell you the difference between a sawzall and a circular saw simply by sound.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, I think I could too. And then I thought to myself, I have those two items.
Correct.
So I told my guys, hook them up in the back and put a mic there, and we will try this. I'll tease it a little. I had so many thoughts when I knew you were coming in. I had a dinner with a very good friend of mine who's, very Hollywood, very Santa Monica, and very progressive, But he respects me, and he respects my take on things. And I gave him an answer to this question, and you tell me what it feels like to you. He was saying, what's your take on Donald Trump? Like, you know him a little bit. You've been around him. What's your take? Because I know everyone in Hollywood just thinks he's a madman. And I said, I think he has a big ego. And I think he treats this country like it's his business. And he wants the business to succeed.
Yeah.
That's what he's doing. Mm-hmm. And I don't think there's anything nefarious. And I think you can also disagree with some of the moves, like you would disagree with somebody making a business decision.
100%.
But I think it's a guy with a huge ego who wants his legacy to be, when I was running this company known as the United States,
it did well.
It did well. Is that a fair statement?
I think it's actually very fair. I mean, you can see that. I mean, one of the examples I like to use was they're building the new Air Force One. There's two planes sort of matching. And he calls Boeing. He goes, listen, I got a big Boeing himself, right? He's like, I know what these planes cost. Like, how come two 747s cost, you know, $4 billion?
Right.
And they're like, well, you know, there's a lot of extra communicate. I get that. He's like, still seems kind of high. Do it for less. Okay, we'll do it for three. And he's sitting there like, what? Like, well, how come no one, right. Like, you can do it for three. He's like, yeah, we, you know, we want to have good relationships with the government. We do a lot with them. Like, yeah, we can do it for three. And he goes, well, why didn't you do it before? He goes, well, no one ever bothered to ask. No right. one even bothered to ask in the years prior, you know, to all of this. You know, they're used to just giving a nut. You've seen it. The proverbial $400 hammer. It's like,
right.
Well, because no one gives a crap. No one's in government. So few have ever actually run businesses. So few have ever had people's livelihood, their family's well-being dependent on their success every day. That's what he had for decades. The weight of the world. Thousands of people dependent on him winning every day. That was what was going to feed their families. And so, you know, I will say it's so nice to have a politician who's actually signed the front of a paycheck for a change rather than just the back. And, you know, I think that resonates. And that mentality of like, well, it was a 2-minute phone call. I saved $1 billion. It's like, who's building the aircraft carrier? How many billions can we save off that one? And he's just going to pick up the phone and do it. And those are the sort of the unsung things that he's literally doing. And I think it's a big part of why so many even in the establishment push back, because they're like, well, we've never questioned those guys because we want to get on the board of XYZ company when we retire here because we gave them a cush deal and they sort of owe it to us later on. And that's the sickness of the swamp.
We have the tools ready.
Let's do it.
We also... I was interested in your background. I was interested hearing about the book and your grandparents and Czechoslovakia and getting a taste of communism firsthand early and often. And it was funny. I was just like listening and I was walking my dog and I was thinking about your life growing up and my life growing up. And they really couldn't have been further apart. They couldn't have been further apart. But we did sort of arrive at the same destination, which is I don't like communism. I don't like any version of it. I don't like freebies. I don't like freebies not because I don't like people. I believe it makes them weak.
Correct.
And you hurt the group you're giving the handouts 100%. To. And you always qualify it by saying, of course, when people are stricken with horrible diseases and everything, they need wheelchair ramps. Certain percentage of people, I get it.
Yeah.
But it's sort of the same conversation you have with, like, of course there's some real racism.
It's the AOC Green New Deal, and we're going to pay for those not willing to work. I go, wait, not willing or not able? Because there is a distinction that you're drawing.
It's all you have, and I grew up with a little slice of communism in North Hollywood, California, because I lived in a broken down house that was my grandparents' rental property. It was a one bedroom, one bath pile of junk. They bulldozed it. Since, but it was a free house. I got a free house. My mom got welfare and food stamps. I got free lunches at school. And I understand just how debilitating 100%. That is. My mom couldn't get out of her own way. She was just stymied by it. She wasn't compelled to clean herself up. And I just watched her just spiral. Like, she literally just put on weight and sat in her room and waited for that next government block of cheese to show up. Mm-hmm. And I realized it hurts people. You didn't
Without
help.
Question.
You didn't help. You thought you were helping my mom. You were not helping my mom. You were hurting my mom. And you went to Czechoslovakia as a young boy. Tell us that.
Well, you know, it's interesting because, again, I have to, in 2019 especially, I have to disclaim everything, being like, yes, I recognize that I'm the son of a billionaire from New York City. So, you know, but I have a mother that escaped communist Czechoslovakia. She was a good athlete. She was able to do that. She was able to come here legally. I know that's not a distinction most people won't make. But you know, my grandfather was a blue-collar electrician from what was then communist Czechoslovakia. And I remember as a kid seeing my parents' wedding photo. I was like, okay, so well, there's my grandfather. There's my mom. Where's my grandmother? You know, and they wouldn't let her out of the country because they, you know, if they both left the country, they're never coming back. They would defect, right? And so I was like, what kind of system does this? And, you know, I spoke to it at length with my grandfather who, again, blue-collar electrician, similar, you know, background perhaps to yourself, right? And from that part of the world. And he recognized the incredible blessings that we have in this country, the freedoms, all of those things. And he's like, listen, he's had the conversation with my father. He's like, he's got to see the other side. And so from the age of five, I mean, they were involved in my life. I spoke the language fluently. You know, from the age of five, they brought me over there. And my first memory of fear, and I don't have many memories from like 5, 6 years old. I mean, I don't think any of us do, you know, but was going over there. And it was early 80s. You know, it was pretty cool. I was wearing a jean jacket with the stars and stripes on it. And I remember getting pulled out of line by a guy in a drab communist era type military thing with a AK over, and he's starting to question me, like, was I there essentially trying to promote America and capitalism? Because, and like, I was five, like, I was like, I'm not one of these woke 5 year olds like you read about today on Twitter. My 2.5 year old questioned me about nuclear proliferation on the Korean Peninsula, and so. I remember that, and it just struck me so much. Then I'd go and, it wasn't helicopter grandparenting. It was like, you're going to the store. I've waited in those bread lines. I've been in empty supermarkets waiting for bread. I can promise you it's not nearly as glamorous as Bernie Sanders would make it out to be. And so I've lived it from such different perspectives, but I saw that every summer until the fall of the wall. And I saw what that system did to great loving what would have been hardworking people, but when there was literally no incentive to do anything more, basically people did the minimum because there was no upside, and it destroyed people, and it destroyed work ethic, and it was terrible. And to this day, it's sort of interesting. My grandmother is not alive; she's still 93 years old, and she lives over there, and she only gets sort of CNN, right? Because they don't have an alternate programming type of deal there, and so she'll call me in tears. Now, this is not some weak little nothing, she's an older frail lady now, but she hid from the Nazis in the basement of her farmhouse for 2 years, during World War, II, right, as a, late teen, I guess, early 20s. She lived through 40 years of communism, and she's there calling me like every couple of weeks. And you can't let this become, a thing in the United States. It always sounds so good. It's always free. Everything's always great. It's not done. I mean, this is a woman who's been through a lot in tears, calling me her grandson for fear of my future, for my children's future. She's watched her daughter live that American dream. She knows how bad it can be on the other side. And I mean, this is driving a 93-year-old woman to tears. And I always say, like, these people who are – it's no longer a fringe element of the left that's pushing this sort of socialist communist nonsense. Like, these are mainstream leading candidates. And I say, like, simple question, man. We've seen the debates. I mean, you'll get a Democrat at this point. You shouldn't even say Democrat because there's a couple still reasonable ones left, although they've been put in a corner. You get a leftist to say just about anything, right? I say, why don't they have someone who's actually lived under these regimes, under these systems? Like, one, I mean, you have all of Eastern Europe. You have the former Soviet Union. You have China. Closer to home, you have Cuba and Venezuela. Probably 100 million people. How come there's not one person from there that lived under it? That's willing to come here and say, no, we got to bring that shit here. This is awesome.
Well,
it doesn't exist. It's scary, man.
I have a couple thoughts. One is, as I was listening, and capitalism, and we're both big fans of that, and how it's sort of – I don't think people understand how important working is to human beings, especially if you live in the United States, and how it just sort of robs you of your dignity and your person. You lose a lot of your personality. I started thinking about, socialism and communism and authoritative dictators and things like that. I said to someone the other day that our market, capitalism isn't a system. It's what happens when you leave people alone.
Correct.
So these other places are a system that's imposed. If you just took 100 people and put them on an island – capitalism would spring up.
Correct.
Somebody would just go out and get abalone from the sea.
Do a little bit more and eat a little bit more.
And another guy would weave a basket. And at some point, you'd trade that guy for his basket and you'd give him some abalone. Like, yep. And then we'd have coconuts and we'd use them as currency. Like some, it's just what is. So to me, when you're fighting capitalism, you're fighting what is, and that's why it can never naturally work out. That's why there is no version of it working out.
Well, I think 100%. And I mean, and if you look at the alternative, you can, I mean, point to an example where it's succeeded. I mean, I've seen it kill hundreds of millions of people. I've seen it decimate economies. And the notion that, hey, it's failed 100 times over and over. It's killed 100 million plus people. But you know what? It's going to work this time. Like, well, it's the slippery slope that my grandmother is so worried about, Adam. That's the thing. It always sounds so good on paper.
Yeah.
It always sounds so good on paper. And it's, dominating academia and all of these things. But again, where's that person who's actually lived it? Where's that person who's actually experienced it? They don't exist.
Well, what I always say, I sort of describe it this way because I'm a car guy. You go to Jay Leno's garage, and he has Chrysler made a turbine car in the early 60s, kind of experimental car. And it makes a cool sound, and it'll it'll run off Chanel number 5 or kerosene or anything. And it's really cool.
Yeah.
But it and it seems like the future.
Yeah.
But it doesn't work.
Correct.
It just doesn't work. Now, the old internal combustion engine that Henry Ford put in his first car, that's what works the best.
Right.
And when I hear guys like Bernie Sanders talking, I hear him go, well, we're not going to do a turbine car. That doesn't work. We're just going to do sort of a turbine car. And I'm like, no, this one works.
Yeah.
That one doesn't work. And a, your version of the one that doesn't work is still not going to work.
You know, I think 100% right. And that's what it is. But the real problem is, you know, it, because I feel like mainstream media, pop culture, everyone's made this cognizant decision to sort of be the marketing wing of the left. It's really hard because you don't have anyone holding them to account. I mean, you saw, you know, Green New Deal. It's so wonderful, right? $93 trillion. That's 15 times what the U.S. government brings in a year in revenue. So if you don't do anything else, not a road, not a school, not a plane for the military, you know, you could maybe pay to stop cows from farting and eliminate air travel over 15 years. And, you know, all of the you know leading candidates in the president, you know, they sign up for it. What's more scary is that they got sort of conned into, you know, signing on to a plan put out by a freshman congresswoman who 2 weeks prior didn't know the three branches of government, but they're all sort of signing on. Mitch McConnell actually did something. He goes, okay, let's vote on it. Oh, well, that's political theory. I was like, no, you guys all signed on to this thing. We're going to let you vote on your bill. Isn't that the nature of it? And him letting them vote on their bill is political theater, but them grandstanding about how wonderful this is and it's going to magically pay for itself isn't. And that's the problem. There is no one there holding people to account. I think Trump is that guy. I think my father's that guy, and that's what drives them crazy. It's like, oh, man, like we can't get away with this shit anymore because someone's going to be there. You know, it sounds hard to believe because, yeah, like, hey, he'll get on Twitter and he'll send some fire stuff off, but, like, he's actually the adult in the room as it comes to sort of fiscal responsibility with these sort of things, and they are not. But there's no one calling them out. They're just like, you know what? It sounds good. We want these guys to win. We're going to pretend that Elizabeth Warren can come up with a $52 trillion plan over 10 years, that's $5 trillion a year, about 90% of U.S. government revenue, to eliminate private insurance that most people are very happy with.
Like,
asinine.
I want to make a distinction. Dennis Prager does it all the time between left and liberal. I think of myself as liberal, but I don't think of myself as left.
Yeah.
And I think Prager feels that way. And I think you feel that way to a degree as well. Like you live and let live,
Yeah, 100%.
Sexuality like, and that
means
kind of
not,
stuff.
You know, I mean, I did, you know, Dave Rubin earlier today. I've been talking to him for 8 years, you know? He's a gay guy. Like I totally, I'm live and let live to a point. I mean, where I use, you know, the example I use in the book is, you know, the trans movement today. I think I could care less, man. Identify how you want. Like I'm a, you know, happy people are productive people. They will get stuff done. I think that's wonderful. Do what you want. It's when I started seeing, you know, guys at, you know, 25 that were, you know, weightlifters. They say, you know what? I'm going to be a woman now and I'm going to compete against the women and I'm going to break every single world record in a matter of seconds. You know, I see it with, you know, the bike riding world record. And it's like,
yes,
where are the feminists? Where are the feminists
They're
that
scared.
Fought for Title IX? No, but that's my point.
They're
the example
scared.
I use in the book, you may not have gotten there yet, is Martina Navratilova, right?
I got there.
You know, she was, you know, she's a, you know, lesbian. She's been an LGBT activist for 40 years, which is about 35 years before it was cool.
Right.
She did this thing. She led the movement. She led the charge. She came out as one of the most accomplished female athletes in history and was like, yeah, this is ridiculous. And, like, her people destroyed her.
Right.
She was canceled. 40 years of, you know, LGBT, you know, activism meant nothing. She had to walk it back within days. Her career was over. So 3 weeks later, she has to come out hitting Trump. Now, you know, no one talks about, like, we knew her growing up. Like, she had a similar story to my mother. They're both Czech. They're both athletes. They're, you know, they both escaped that. You know, they don't talk about that. So she hits Trump because that's the penance that you have to pay to try to be welcomed back into woke society. And that's the thing. There is no... You can never be woke enough today, Adam. Like, if you're woke now in 15 minutes, like, you're alt-right, and
well,
you can't keep up with it.
I always tell people it's called a progressive movement. It's got progress and movement in the title. It never stops. It just keeps moving.
Correct. But it gets to a point where it's asinine. It gets to a point, like, I can be as live and let live as you want, but you start taking away a scholarship from a young woman who worked her ass off for her whole life to be the best in the in her state, in the country, in the world. And, you know, she's being beaten by three trans runners who were men the year before. And, you know, that they're taking her scholarship. They're taking her, you know, ranking, whatever it may be. I say, where is this? The example I like was that MMA fighter.
Yeah.
Something Fox.
She cracked someone's skull.
She fractured the orbital bone of a female opponent in the first round of a fight. Like, well, yeah, because she was a dude a few weeks before. You know what I mean? Like, you know, that we cannot even address that there are biological differences, whether that be bone structure, you know, muscle density, lung capacity. Like, come on. Like, this was basic science, you know, about 3 weeks ago.
Right.
And today it's like, no, they were all wrong on this one. It's nuts.
I want to talk. When we got the tool to do,
okay.
I want to talk about listening to the book. There's a couple things I got and things I don't think people know about you. I don't think they know how much time you spent outdoors.
Yeah.
I don't think they know how you took a gap year and just moved to Colorado and worked as a bartender and just went out hunting and fishing. Like,
mm-hmm.
You're also out 28 days in a row, I believe.
Yeah.
Just you and a Jeep and like a rifle. And
bow. That was actually a bow, but yeah.
Well, so going out just alone 28 days?
Yeah, or, you know, sometimes with friends. But, I mean, even before that, that was my gap year. I mean, I moved out to Colorado, worked in a bar so I could have my days to fish and hunt, during the seasons and just make sure that I knew what I was getting into, you know, joining a company. Or, you know, I didn't want to have that regret some Saturday night at 2 o'clock in the morning when you're trying to close a deal, be like, man, I wish I did something else. You know, so it was awesome, but it also made me realize that, you know, I was hungrier for more than just that. So, I am a really passionate outdoorsman. I spend all my weekends. I'm not like sort of on that New York City like rubber chicken dinner charity circuit. Like, I'm actually much more at home with sort of, you know, just blue collar guys. And like when we got into politics and I'd go to Iowa, you know, you'd see all these politicians and then they're showing up with their token friend from Iowa that they met 5 minutes before. I'm like, well, I'm there with my buddy in the state police who I mentioned in the book. It's like, yeah, I've been sleeping on his couch during deer season for the last few years. But like, you know, you guys do you. You know, I've always had probably more of that, you know, affinity towards, you know, blue collar America. Again, it's where I spend my time. And I, again, full disclaimer, I get it. I'm the son of a billionaire from New York, but like, that's sort of my happy place. I've been dating Kimberly for a while. She's like, how come I spend more time with guys that are hunting? Like, we don't even know any of your New York friends. It's like, I deal with enough heat on a daily basis. Like, that's my happy place. That's where I go to get away from it. And so, you know, it's where I do spend my time and all my vacation time. You know, I don't vacation at some luxury resort that often. You know, I go to some occasionally, but like, you know, my happy place is, you know, put a backpack on me, give me a rifle, drop me off in the Yukon, and I'll see you in 2 weeks. Like, I'm going to live out of a backpack and tent. You know, I love that aspect of it.
You mentioned in the book you stopped drinking.
Yeah.
But you didn't mention you were sober, quote unquote.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty much, I'm sober. Like, I don't, I have my father had that in his genes, and that's why he never drank. His brother died of alcoholism. I used to, you know, party pretty hard, that way. And I think the one thing I had is, you know, a strong willpower to sort of stop, but I can't do it partway. Okay. It's just not my personality, meaning I can't sort of, you know, I can have a couple beers with you or whatever and, you know, be fine. But guess what? The next time I have it, there's going to be a couple more, and the next time a couple more, and the next time, and it just gets me to a bad place. And so, you know, I'm sort of an all or nothing personality for it. So I just have to stop.
Where, as I was listening to the audiobook and you're talking about hitting the campaign trail, and there's many stories about sort of being up for 40 hours straight, mm-hmm. and going from one event to the next. And your dad's famously has that ability to stave off sleep and exhaustion and everything else that everyone seems to experience. Is that somehow in the genes? I mean, I don't know. Most people hit a wall after being up for 20 hours straight or working X amount. And I have a strong capacity to do that, but I don't think I have the Trump genes.
Listen, I do think there's an element of it. I mean, I followed my father around my whole – I mean, you want to wear yourself out, like follow him around a construction site. Like, you'll be there at 5 a.m. You know, you're still going at 7 o'clock at night. Be like, you can't even imagine – like, you've covered it all 50 times. But he's still – he's always had that. I mean, I used to get the call sort of at, you know, early 20s, like starting to work and like, hey, why aren't you in the office? I'm like, well, it's 5 in the morning on a Saturday. Like, I'd be smart ass. Like, hey, why aren't you in the office, Dad? He's like, I am. I'm standing in your office right now, and you're not here. I'm like, oh shit. Like, here. He's always had that. I think I have. I definitely got some of that capacity. I just sort of, even in the book, I talk about literally I lost 25 pounds because it's like I could do a fundraising call or another speech or call into a radio show or I could have lunch, which I don't have unlimited time, so I could do one or the other. So I lose 25 pounds. You know, it was interesting as we're on the book tour because you've done this, I'm sure. You know, it can be pretty brutal. We're doing that. And my publisher, who's a, you know, Center Street, like this is a big publisher. They go, we've never seen someone work that hard on a book tour. And it's just sort of, well, if I have a job to do, like, that's what I'm doing. Like, I'll worry about sleep later. I'll take care of that when I'm dead. Now, I think there is, my father has sort of this genetic capacity to keep that pace on 4 hours of sleep sort of.
What is his actual, and I have a couple of questions. One is, I'm an atheist, but I just feel like I want to make hay while the sun's shining.
Yeah.
Like, if I'm going to get my car and drive across town, I tell my assistant, line up some interviews. I'll do them from the car because otherwise it's a waste of time.
Correct.
And I don't think it makes me super motivated or super hard driven. It's just I'd like to be more effective with my time management. Yeah. Is that a feeling that you have?
I mean, he doesn't waste time. I mean, but he still enjoys life. I mean, you could have – I mean, no one knows more about sports than my father. He sees that. I mean, he'll remember guys' stats from years before. He's got, you know, the memory side of that as well. But, yeah, there's always something accretive for him. There's never – you know, he doesn't lounge. He doesn't vacation. You know, when we were – you know, back in the day, you know, if he played golf, he played at his courses because he's like, well – we're going to move that tree over there. We can make this hole better by, you know, moving the green here. And if we take the sand trap. So he's always sort of tinkering. That's his thing. So whatever he's doing, that's his work. That's his vocation. That's his passion. He's not one of these guys that shows up to work and says, oh, shit, I can't wait till 5 o'clock so I can get out of here and do the next thing. I mean, it's his work is his hobby. And when you combine those things, he just wants to do them 24/7. And that's what he does.
What is his schedule? If in fact he has a schedule,
like, he really
what
is.
What time does he go to bed and what time does he wake up?
He's generally, I mean, you know, if he sleeps, it's oftentimes early, but then he wakes up insanely early. So, I mean, I would say it's literally not an exaggeration to say he probably sleeps 4 to 5 hours a night. So, you know, when you go to bed is one thing, but you know, we'd see that during the campaign. I mean, it was like, you'll get the call at like 3:30. Yep, your dad just sent out a tweet. Let's get you on radio. You gotta go talk about it. And so, you know, he's never needed it. He's just had, you know, sort of a whether it's a blessing or a curse, who knows? But he always goes and, you know, has never needed that much sleep. It's not one of those guys that, you know, brags about it like, oh, it's so great. He just never has. Like, I mean, he'll go to sleep. He's not setting an alarm clock. He just wakes up. Once he's up, he just goes. Like, it's not like, okay, I'm going to obligatorily set an alarm clock and I'm going to be miserable all day and sleep through it. On the campaign, it was incredible. Like, I saw him go. And, like, listen, when you're on a campaign and you're giving 5-6 speeches a day in front of big crowds, like, you need to put out energy to get it back, right? It's not like, you know, sitting there on a couch watching TV all day. It drains you. And I've seen him get out of there, finish up a speech at 11 o'clock at night, get on his plane, take a red eye to the other coast, literally talk with his advisors all day, not utilize that 4 or 5 hours of flight time to, you know, take a nap,
right,
land, go right into TV and do another day of, you know, TV, 6-7 speeches and not having slept at all. And honestly, at the end of the second day, you know, he may be a little grumpier than he was at the end of the first day, but like, it's not like he's collapsing. It's a little freakish.
You ready to name that tool?
Let's do it.
All right, now I don't know which one they're going to play.
Now these are proper, like solid electrical. You know, it's not like the battery operated ones where, you know, the sound isn't there because the power is not generated. Because I just want to put some disclaimers in here.
I think they're both plugged in
because it should be obvious just from the spin up. You know what I mean? The circular saw versus the sort of reciprocation of the sawzall, right?
It'll be obvious to us. I don't know if it's obvious to everybody. And I was going to mix in maybe an orbital sander or belt sander or router, but I thought, let's not muddy it. You said in the book, I can tell the difference between a Sawzall.
Let's do it.
Sawzall, by the way, a brand name. It's really a bayonet
saw. It's a reciprocating saw.
Right,
yeah,
reciprocating saw and a circular saw.
But see, I know that,
saw.
So I get a little cred right off the bat, right? Because I wasn't planning on this that being a question.
You know,
or
it's a reciprocating saw. That's exactly what
so,
it is.
So even if I blow it now, I get a little street cred.
You're going to get it. All right. Well, you know what? Don't say it. Write it. Just go A and B, and you write it down, and I'll write it down too.
Okay.
You ready?
Yep. I already know.
All right. And we'll do B anyway. It's over. All right. B. Sorry.
Yeah. I mean, that. Okay. Well.
All right. That's easier than I thought. All right. Would you like to go?
Well, A is obviously the circular, and B is the Sawzall slash reciprocating.
Yes. All right. I'm saying yes.
You can tell from the spin-up. I mean, yes. I was going to say before, the circular has that spin-up while you're getting the blade sort of moving, and then it steadies out. The reciprocating is reciprocating, so it always has that reverb.
I know. I was just walking my dog here in the audiobook, and I thought I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't bring those things in and play name.
By the way,
tool.
You're going to get canceled because someone's going to say, "Oh, it was too easy. You should have come up with some asinine challenge, like the difference between a 5-horsepower motor and a 4-horsepower motor."
Well, there are that are more difficult and more nuanced, but those were the two you cited in the book, so those are the two I brought
in. Well, at least they can't say I'm totally full of shit.
All right. I think we're getting into a ramp mode here. Let's see. So predictions coming up. What do we got for the next election? What are you thinking?
You know, listen, we'll go through, obviously the nonsense of sort of the impeachment. We saw this the first time around. I obviously go into the Mueller hoax in the book pretty extensively just because, I think it's safe to say that I was the number two target of that when you have half of Congress saying they're going to put you, they're going to try you for treason, kind of a big deal. You'll see some of this nonsense. I think in the end, people win. I mean, the economy's crushing it despite literally a cognizant effort by the media to be like, it's almost too good. Let's hope for a fail. I mean, you see them trying to come up with any stats, and then the job numbers come out the next day that are like, again, they beat expectations by a significant margin. You see them almost oh, shit, that means Trump's going to win again. The reality is, man, things are good. People are doing better. Jobs are coming back, despite the hatred. More importantly, I think the hatred is so overplayed at this point that reasonable people get it. The example I use in the book is sort of 2020 when we launched the campaign in Orlando. 47,000 people showed up, Adam, to a stadium that holds 25, right?
So I'm sorry, 2020?
2020.
Oh, when you launched?
When we launched the campaign for 2020, right?
Okay,
so back in January, we did that in Florida, and it was an amazing thing. 47,000 people show up in an arena that holds 25. They stood out there for 2 days in the rain and thunderstorms. I was worried no one was going to be there left. And, you get out there and they're so excited. I introduced the vice president, who introduced my father. It's electric. This was right after the Mueller bullshit sort of came out. And I was like, Mr. Mueller, have you actually read the Mueller report? He's like, crickets. And I got back and I got done with that. And it was just this warm thing. So many people partaking in the political process, just excited to be, again, living that dream that they believe to be, substantially better now than before, even better than what they had hoped would happen in 16, because now you actually have results to back up what were promises. And we're used to being promised a lot of things by politicians. Delivery is a different story. And I got done. It was this awesome event. And I turn on the TV and you see these guys in the mainstream just, ugh, did you see those people? They were out there in flip-flops. That must be their formal attire. Ha, 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 ha. I mean, this is like mainstream stuff. This isn't like fringe elements. They're on MSNBC. And there's that level of the disdain for just hardworking Americans. Yet that's – honestly, it's shocking. It's frankly, it's freaking disgusting.
Well,
and I saw that and it just makes me so pissed off. But they still don't get that those guys see that. They still don't get that even through their filter that's 93% negative, people are able to look through that and be like, yeah, no, this is pretty good. They've overplayed the hand so much that I think it has less efficacy than it would if they were even a little bit reasonable with him.
I agree.
And that's the problem. People are like, okay, here we go. We see it again with sort of the, now it's, Ukraine, oh, the whistleblower. It's like the outrage cycle was me outing the guy like we discussed. It's like, well, I didn't out him. It was – his name's in the title of it. And they just – no one wants to talk about the guy that he's out there with Biden as his guest at a state dinner, that he's literally there, buddies with Brennan. And guys, we've been through this hoax the first time. You want it to be this innocent public servant, but he's not. He's a, he's a deep stater. He's very well tied with these guys. And again, the people were fooled. Now, if they didn't go all in on collusion where it's obviously there, and guys like Adam Schiff, since we're in his district, I've seen evidence. I'm like, wow, you've seen evidence? You didn't show it to Robert Mueller? That's sort of shocking. You've seen it and you say it for 3 years to the American people. Then it doesn't exist. Then there's no accountability. There's no credibility. And so we're just seeing version number 2.0 of that.
I saw Adam Schiff this morning at KTLA.
You call him Pencil Neck?
I asked him if he had anything to say to you and he said, if he did, they couldn't print it, so to speak. So just obscenities. Hey. They're giving me the wrap it up, so I shall respect the finger going in a circle.
Well, we'll have to do it again, man. That was fun.
I appreciate it. Triggered, how the left thrives on hate and wants to silence us. And yes, next time, I kept promising myself I was going to get into this long, deep sort of psychological dive into how the Trumps are made up, but we're only able to touch on it. So we'll do it again.
Let's do it again.
The book's great. I've been enjoying it. And I think what I think in summary, I will say this. I think a lot of people have an idea of you and they have an idea of everyone. Everyone on the right has an idea of everyone on the left. Everyone has an idea of everyone. You sit down, you listen to their book or you read their book or you hear their story and you realize, oh, they're people.
Yeah.
They had troubles. They had trials and tribulations. There are things they like cooking that you like to do or camping or hiking or whatever. And it will tend to build a bridge to bridge that chasm of I hate him. I'm nothing like him. I hate the ground he walks on. When you take a dive into this book, you'll realize that Donald Trump Jr. is a lot more human, and you may have a lot more in common with him than you think.
Well, that's a great endorsement. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, that was Donald Trump Jr. Very interesting cat. That's why we had the Secret Service. I was going to say Secret Security here. And we'll do the news in a second. First, betonline.ag, NFL Weekly Pick'em Charity Contest, NFL and college football plus NBA action. Visit betonline.ag to take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Use promo code PODCAST1 for a 50% sign-up bonus. Matchups, week 11, Steelers at Browns. Damn, Steelers beat my Rams last week. Patriots at Eagles, that'd be a good game there. Cardinals at 49ers, Falcons at Panthers. Jets at Redskins. We've got $500 rewards to give out each week to five listeners and 5,000 season-long charity contest. Join the conversation on Twitter with hashtag SportsNetChallenge. I'm going to pick New England at Philly as my lock at 35-21. Use the promo code PODCAST1 to receive a 50% sign-up bonus today. BetOnline.ag. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back with the news right after this.